This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
You know what? Bundle up. Just stay indoors or stay in that car. Don't get out of your car. Listen to the radio all day. Start a fire.
Not in your car.
Yeah, don't start a fire in your car. That's a good point. Think about it. Hollywood Casino Press Box. Martin and Chuck in for Frank. Tomorrow, we're going to be at the Schnucks on Lime Ferry Road. And then on Friday, Kingside Diner in Clayton. And right about now, Bob Wallace is saying, why didn't they invite me to the remotes where there'll be a lot of free food? That's because we don't like to share. Longtime NFL executive, former Rams VP, Bob Wallace, in studio. Robert, good to see you.
Nice seeing you, Martin. Nice seeing you, Charlie.
You know, my advice earlier in the show was that everybody should go to law school. And I used the example of Rams Park, how that's still dragging through the courts and arbitration. You went to law school, young man.
I did go to law school. I went to Georgetown.
Do you recommend that everyone go to law school? Or is there a certain point where we're at saturation point and not everybody can be a lawyer?
Well, no, I think it's a great education. You learn how to solve problems, and that's one of the things that I really appreciate about my law school education is that you weren't only just looking to point out a problem, you were looking to see how to solve them, and I think that's an important skill to have as an executive.
So if you're going to Georgetown Law School now, what do you think that tuition is?
I think it's about $50,000 a year.
Okay.
It wasn't that when I went. And, you know, but the cost of education is out the roof these days. I mean, it's, you know, 62 to go to Yale, which is where I went to undergrad.
Well, you were probably on scholarship, you know, football scholarship.
Yeah, they don't have those in the Ivy
even
leagues.
Though Bullet Bob was the running back they targeted. Sure, he ended up being a great executive, but we wanted him for his football skills. All right, 17 years ago, you're in New Orleans, probably being wined and dined by Georgian friends. I've been saying this for a while. It never entered anyone's mind from St. Louis that they might lose that game. Do you remember that same mindset that whole week? That it was, you know, the Patriots, hey, good for them, AFC team, but we've got the greatest show on turf. We're 14-2. We steamrolled everybody. Did it ever occur to you?
Yes, it did. We were clearly the favorites. We were probably the largest favorite since the Jets beat the Colts back in, 69? So, it happens, and it happened again. We were a really good team. I mean, you know, I think Mike March said it as well as anybody. It was a special group and a special time. And did we expect to lose? Absolutely not. But it happened.
And if you look back, is this a crazy theory? If the Rams win that game, does all of the history in St. Louis change? Because there was a lot of dysfunction that came out of that, and things kind of got sideways. Maybe the team is even more popular, gets on a roll, or does it not matter at all once Stan owns the team?
Yeah, I'm not sure it changes it once Stan owns the team. I mean, I think we would have had a longer period of success. But, you know, football is secular. So, you know, guys get old. You know, Marshall's knees didn't hold up. Kurt broke his hand. You know, so those type of things happen. Would we have had more success? I think so for a while. Because I thought Mike was a great coach Monday through Saturday. I mean, there was nobody who motivated the team as well as he did. He had, as I said, a special group of guys that were really very, very smart. He challenged them. It's sort of like what, you know, the Patriots do. I've been reading a lot about the Patriots in the last couple of days because my son works for the Dolphins, and they've just hired their defensive coordinator, I guess, is going to be there. And kind of the way they do things, and they present them with a different game plan every week, and they teach them different ways. And Mike did that with his guys. I mean, he had, you know, Marshall and Isaac and, you know, Kurt were all smart football players, and he challenged them every week, and I thought that kept them really sharp.
And is there any doubt looking back that Belichick kind of game planned to get into March's head a little bit and to say, listen, I know you guys are this wide open attack. We'll see if you can do anything else. We'll see if you can beat us. And granted, it was probably illegal the way they defended.
Yeah, they took an aggressive approach and said, we're just going to beat up your receivers and beat up Marshall. And as we've seen in the playoffs over this year, you know, there's less calls during the playoffs than there are during the regular season. They let him play a little bit more, and I think Belichick knew that. You know, I guess there was some criticism, or there was some. There was a charge that they were taping our practices in New Orleans. Then there was a charge that Belichick decided that he would challenge Mike to run because he knew he wanted to beat him passing, so that he just really backed off and didn't try to stop Marshall in the run game. He tried to stop him in the pass game. They just mugged our receivers. They changed the rules after that.
Right. So I ran into a former Rams employee, and when I said this the other day, I think people say, oh, it's Bob. A former Rams employee just randomly saw them at the DMV, and they said, I'll be rooting for the Rams, but it took the Patriots as the opponent for me to actually root for the Rams. Where are you in all of this?
You know, I have a lot of respect for Belichick as a football coach. I mean, I think he is the greatest football coach of all time. And I kind of have a soft spot, or not a soft spot, an appreciation of excellence. I mean, I'm not one of those people who roots against the Yankees or the Cardinals or the Patriots. So I think I probably don't really care who wins the game. I'm hoping for a good game. You know, I've heard a lot of people tell me they're not watching the game at all. They won't watch it. I'd like to say that I'm not watching the game, but I know that's not true. I'm going to watch the game. So I always, you know, unless the team that I work for is playing in it, I really usually just root for a good team. During the course of a game, you end up picking a team that you like more. I think going into it, I prefer for the Patriots to win. Although, you know, I have nothing against, you know, and I root for artists and Molly and some of those people that I knew and I hired to do well. But I think probably going into it, I'm rooting for the Patriots.
I think, Bob, what's amazing about Bill Belichick, too, is you just mentioned the fact that he's scheming against Mike Martz back in the day. He was known as this great defensive coordinator for the Giants. And then now 20 years into his Patriots reign, pun intended, he's now the offensive guy. He went from being this big defensive mind to now, what is he known for more with the Patriots? I mean, scheming up the defense too, but it's Brady and it's getting the receivers like the Amendolas and the Edelmans of the world and drafting these guys that play quarterback in the MAC and moving him to receiver and all that. And he's kind of like changed the narrative on how he coaches.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a really good coach. I mean, you know, I used to always say the best coach I always thought was Don Shula, because Shula took his players took his system and molded it to his players. I mean, remember, he went to the Super Bowl with David Woodley as his quarterback, and they just ran the football, and he had Zonker and Kick and Greasy. They were more conservative. And then he gets Dan Marino, and they're flinging the ball around 40 times a game, where some coaches try to fit guys into their system. And Belichick, you know, he takes players and he uses them. I mean, you remember when he had, the receiver, Trey Brown or something, playing? Because
Trey Brown,
they were short on receivers and secondary guys, and they had this guy in a secondary. So, I mean, he is a spectacular coach. He game plans. He takes, you know, they always say he's going to take your best player out of the game. Well, why doesn't everybody do that? I mean, if it's so easy to do, but it's special. If I was a young person, and getting into the coaching, I beg Bill Belichick to let me spend a week around him and just see what he's doing. Now, what you got to be careful of is, and what I always say, and a little criticism I had of Steve Spagnuolo, is that when he came in here, he tried to bring what the Giants did into St. Louis. Well, you got to be yourself. You can't bring in a system and put it into a different system. You can adjust it, and you got to be yourself, and you got to be honest. So I think you can't just copy what Bill Belichick did because you're from the Bill Belichick tree, but I think you can learn from him.
Yeah, I think in hindsight, if Spagnuolo had brought Tuck and Umanura and Strahan, he would have been a hell of a lot better.
Right, exactly. I mean, you can, when you have three defensive ends that can rush the passer and you can put them in all at the same time, that's pretty special.
Bob Wallace, longtime executive with the Rams, also the football Cardinals, Philadelphia Eagles. Think about that. He worked for Bidwell. Well, he didn't really work for Kroenke. Georgia was basically your boss, and then Lurie in Philadelphia. So you know all the backstories. Remember late in 99, the Rams are going to the Super Bowl. They're the story of the league. Vermeil is the toast of the league because he's got a team that's really good. But Mike Martz is emerging as a coaching candidate. It's the same way now, 20 years later. The assistants are always the hot candidates. New England was supposedly hot on Martz before they went after Belichick, and then the Rams countered by saying, all right, this guy's not leaving, and they gave him the deal famously right before the playoffs that said he is the heir apparent to Vermeil. We'll make sure, Mike, you stick around. You'll become – how close was he, do you think, to going to New England? And do you think that if it's handled any differently, would Vermeil have stuck around longer?
You know, I don't know, Martin. You know, and I think it was a little early. I think it was kind of like in November where they extended him. I mean, I think, as you say, the assistant, you know, the coordinator on the hot team is the hot candidate coming into, you know, in the coaching cycle. And I think Mike would have been a hot coach in that cycle. I mean, our offense was really ahead of its time. You know, I think, you know, Vermeil was not pushed out. I mean, I remember John begging Dick to stay when he announced. I mean, he announced on Monday, right after we got back from the Super Bowl, or Tuesday, that he was going to step aside. And I remember prior to that, John Shaw asked, you know, said, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" You know, I think Dick had reached the mountaintop. I think, you know, he had done what he wanted to do. He had done what he set out to do. And I think he thought in his mind at that time it was the proper time to walk away. Obviously, on hindsight, he has said and he showed that he thought he made a mistake doing that.
Yeah, he says the biggest regret of his life. And then a year later, he's being introduced in Kansas City. As far as the legacy here, those memories are great. But we look at Isaac Bruce and Kurt Warner and we say, God, those are our guys, right? But they're still Rams. And so when we see Kurt Warner on the sideline in L.A., they're talking about Isaac, maybe, if they do win, presenting the Lombardi Trophy. I can't blame them, though. Do you understand? Like, as a player, don't you think for them that's still their team? Like, Torrey Holt tweets out about the Rams, and people are like, you traitor. I'm like, what? It's still their team.
I mean, it's their team. That's who they grew up with. Are they not supposed to have an NFL team now? There's not one in St. Louis. What are they supposed to, you know? That's what they had, you know the St. Louis football Cardinal guys. You know, they've kind of repatriated with the Arizona Cardinals.
They were
now.
Homeless for a while,
right?
They
were homeless, and you know, when we moved here in the Rams, we tried to, you know, provide them with some sort of sense of belonging and honor them. That when we put up in the dome, we put their names around the ring of honor. And you know, that's what the Cardinals are doing. You know, Jim Hart and Roy Green and Dan Dierdorf in the Cardinals ring of fame out in Arizona. That's just the way it is. So, no, I don't begrudge them. You know, I see Keely Fimbres, who worked for us here, and she's got tweets on her Facebook page, and you kind of say, I wish she didn't. But right. You feel happy for her and artists that, you know, they're getting a chance to enjoy the Super Bowl again.
So it seems like the league is in more chaos right now in terms of franchise stability, because St. Louis lost the team. Oakland's losing the team. San Diego lost the team. When the goal, stated goal, was to remain in the current markets, has it been like this, or are we seeing more of, like in the old days, we always say, well, in the Rooney days and the Maros, they wouldn't allow all this to happen. Yet teams did leave.
Right.
Has it shifted, though, more so?
It's kind of cycles, Martin, because you look at, you know, back in when the 80s, you know, the mid-80s, the Colts left, and then the Cardinals left. And then, you know, you had some of those, you know, you had threats of even New England leaving, New Orleans leaving, Philadelphia even.
I mean, New England could have come here. Well, they tried. Right? Orthwine owned the team for a second. And
right. That was really never. I mean,
like the league would not have allowed
right,
that,
$10
right?
$10 option to, you know, come to St. Louis. That really wasn't going to happen. But, you know, and then it sort of went into a quiet period. And then you go into the 90s and you have the Rams moving. You have the Browns moving. And now you're at another, you know, then it quiets down. And remember, part of the reason that St. Louis is kind of in the pickle they are is because they had that, you know, clause in the lease that had, you know, first tier. And the first, but nobody anticipated that there would be 20 new stadiums. So then there became a building boom. And that sort of made it so that there's less teams in play to move right now. I mean, if you look at it, maybe Buffalo and New Orleans are the ones that are kind of out there.
Do you think the league, I'm sure they're cognizant of it, do you think they care about the backlash, maybe more so the lawsuits coming from St. Louis, Oakland, potentially San Diego, whatever happens there? But do you think, is the brand hurting enough that now, let's say if Jacksonville down the road is not viable, Will they do what they can to more so keep these teams in those spots, or is it still all about the money? I guess my question is, they've taken a lot of backlash in St. Louis, in Oakland, but nationally, do people care about that, do you think?
Well, you say they've taken a lot of backlash. You look at their ratings. Their TV ratings are better than they have ever been. The games, you know, the championship games were compelling. People watched them. They loved them. You know, do they care about the backlash? Yeah, but, I mean, if you're going to, you know, be able to sell your franchise for $2.5 billion, you know, that kind of makes the hurt or the bad feelings that you have sort of assuaged a little bit. So, you know, I think they are concerned about that. You know, as I say, St. Louis is, you know, especially if we merge the city and the county, we'll be the 10th largest city, and we'll be the city without an NFL football team. You know, I think that they're concerned about that. But, you know, football is as popular as a viewing sport as there is. Now, maybe participation's down because of the concussion stuff and all that. But as a viewing sport, the NFL has really rebounded this year.
I think you just have to view it more like the WWE. You just have to realize there are heels, there are villains. And and instead of thinking of it, and seriously, as a kid, I always, the Shield, the NFL, and these men, Lombardi and Halas, forget all of that. This is entertainment. It's a step maybe below or behind, whatever, the WWE. And Roger is booed and hated almost everywhere he goes. And Belichick and Brady, they're the evil ones. I honestly think it, in terms of the storylines, it reminds me of wrestling. I mean, whether that offends you as a longtime NFL guy, but I think that's kind of where we're at, instead of saying it's this league of noble gentlemen or whatever they used to paint themselves as.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Right. I wouldn't think it's a league of noble gentlemen. I think it's a little bit more pure competition than you get in the WWE, which is a little bit more set up. Although I guess in New Orleans they're saying it was set up.
Stully's going to be waiting for you outside here with a chair.
Did you watch the Royal Rumble on Sunday?
For the Rams to go.
A couple of legal thoughts. And I don't know what you can say, but do you have a gut as to where it'll go with the city, the county? That's the big one. We've heard about the PSL settlements, but the big one really is still the league. And I don't know if you saw that report, Jason Cole, who said that each team that wanted to move, Chargers, Raiders, Rams, signed a sheet of paper in Houston that day that said, we will be responsible for all legal fees in relation to our move. That basically that day, the league said, we're not taking up these votes unless you guys agree to this. And there's also a report that Stan is upset because he's piling up legal fees. That's very believable.
That's very believable. You know, no, I don't really have a sense of where they are on that. What you say, the big lawsuit, which is the RSA versus the RSA brought a case on behalf of themselves.
Regional Sports Authority.
Right, the owner of the Dome. Brought a suit on their behalf with the city and the county, and I think the state joining in on them. And they've had some good rulings for them, for the RSA side, for the St. Louis side, keeping it in state court right now, which is, you know, good for them. They'd rather be in front of a St. Louis jury than not in front of a St. Louis jury or in front of an arbitration. But, you know, there's still a long way to go, you know, and you know, I think St. Louis, more than anything, would, you know, should be happy that if they get some of their money back from what they spent on that stadium.
Do you think they'll end up with some sort of arbitrage again, going to the table and saying just hammer out a deal, or you think it'll play out?
You know, I think eventually at some point both sides say, you know, as you say, and as Stan, you claim Stan's complaining that legal fees continue to mount up, and people say, is there, you know, whenever you're going, one thing about lawsuits, or even arbitrations, as opposed to a settlement or a mediation or something like that, is you're letting a third party determine what the remedy is, and you never know what a third party is going to do. So it seems to me a negotiated settlement is always better. You know, there's risk involved in litigation. You can lose big, you can win big, or, you know, you can get dismissed out, nobody wins, and you've spent a lot of legal fees.
What about Rams Park? So that is still being debated. There's the lease there, and Kroenke has the right to buy that building in 2024 for $1, and they've never indicated that they're going to let that go. That was sent to arbitration almost a year and a half ago. Why is that taking so long?
Well, because there's probably some discovery that's going on, you know, depositions and all that stuff, and they're preparing. But, yes, you're right. They are still in arbitration. I don't know exactly what the status is of that.
And that your gut that Stan would say, oh, don't worry about it. You can just have it. 0% chance?
I think it's small. If there was a big chance, over 50%, you'd think they would have walked away. They would have reached an agreement on that.
All right, last one, because you were around Stan a little bit. You know how he's viewed in St. Louis. Do you think he cares at all? Do you think there's any part of him? I mean, he was a Mizzou guy, lived in Columbia, I guess still has a house in Columbia, is generally reviled. I don't know that he's online looking at the urinal cakes with his face on it. I don't know that he's aware of that, but he has to have some sense that he's a villain in this state, not only city. Do you think he cares?
When I was around Stan, and you know, I was around him from 1995 through when I left in 2010. And you know, he was a fairly passionate fan. He took winning and losing pretty hard. You know, he loved his basketball. You know, he was, you know, really liked John Shaw. Spent a lot of time around John. But was sort of an understated guy. Since he's taken over the team, I have heard he's changed a little bit. I don't know. I haven't spent any time around him. So, you know, when you have so much money, maybe you're just isolated from the real world.
Yeah, we've seen that with Frank, too. He's really changed. He's just kind of in his own. Bob, fun to walk down memory lane, talk a little football here.
I thought we were going to tell you my funny story.
You got a funny story?
Yeah.
Don't bury the lead.
You mentioned New Orleans. And
we're up against it. We got time.
So when you asked me to come on and said, oh, let's talk about Super Bowl stories. So I was saying the one funny story I remember is when we were in New Orleans and we're playing the Patriots. And we're out at dinner. My mother was with me, and she's like 82 at the time or 80-something. And she'd never been to New Orleans, so she's walking around looking at these people on the balconies with their stuff. And then across the street, we see Paul Mason, who I'm going to have lunch with. Paul was our security guy at head of airport. And Georgia and Earl. Remember Earl?
Earl Weatherwax.
Earl Weatherwax.
The cowboy. Georgia's longtime boyfriend,
and
the cowboy.
And they're walking down Bourbon Street, and Paul's clearing out people. And Georgia's walking down the cobblestones in high heels.
High heels, for sure.
And they're clearing it out. And there are people, like, you know, throwing up all over the place. It's Bourbon Street. And seeing her walk down, I just like, look at that.
And I guarantee she was, like, shaking hands and high-fiving.
Right, and Paul's trying to move people out of the way, so, you know, like the parting of the sea.
Earl was the cowboy, and he was George's boyfriend, and they would come into games, and sometimes he'd stay till Monday. And Mike March told me one time he walked into his office as the head coach, and Earl's just sitting there and says, hey, Mike, let's watch some tape or something. He wanted to just go through the
hanging
tape.
Out.
My favorite Georgia was when she walked into one of those post-game press conferences. We're all sitting there in the media waiting for Vermeil or March or somebody, and she walked in and yelled over to Bernie Miklas, Bernie, and he's, hey, George, good to see you. You know, did you get my soup recipe I sent you? I'm like, that was the Rams to me.
Yeah, we were a little different back then. But you know, it was a great group of people there. Still friendly with a bunch of those people, and you know, we had a good time. And as I said a couple times, was a special group and a special time.
Maybe we should be holding on to the good times, Bob. Let's remember the good times, right?
Well, right. Isn't that what they always say? You always remember the good times. You try to forget the bad ones.
And, we should.
I think, you know, St. Louis, you know, we had a parade down Market Street. And, you know, we had never had that for a football team here. So that was it was freezing, but it was a really good time.
Blues fans are still waiting for that. Yep,
Blues
we had one. We had a moment.
That, right.
All right, Rammer is coming up next. We'll talk some Billiken basketball. Thanks to Bob Wallace stopping by. Hollywood Casino Press Box. Martin and Charlie in for Frank, going till 1. Over